Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. In Gerald Kolpan's magic words, he finally crafts fact with fiction as he tells the tale of a Jewish boy interpreter, the world's most estimable magician, a murderous harlot, and America's greatest Indian chief.
The interesting thing about it was when I found out about Julius, I was watching a PBS special on the Jews in America, and for about 10 seconds they showed this picture of this young curly-headed mustached man surrounded by four Indian chiefs. One of them was Sitting Bull. I said, that's my next novel. I got to find out more about this guy. And when I researched him, I found out that one of the things that had actually happened is he had brought a magician named Hermann to Ponca Indian camp for his friend Standing Bear, the great chief, who's the chief who's mentioned in the title. And he performed his act there. And that night, somebody tried to kill him for his hat, because they thought that that was the source of his power. I said, my goodness. I said, this is great. Not only do I have this Jewish kid who comes from Europe and ends up the interpreter for all these great Indian chiefs, but now I've got a magician. So I look him up and find out that Hermann was, in fact, the most famous magician in the world before Houdini. And when I said to myself, well, how could you have known this guy? I did some more research. And I found out that Alexander Hermann, the magician, the great Hermann, his mother's maiden name was Meyer. I said, these guys had to be related. So in my book, they're cousins. And that's how the magic angle came in.
I really enjoyed reading Etta, your first novel. And now you have this other historical novel. How is it for you to be able to take this too good to be true, the story and the connection, and then be able to weave in the fictional notes?
Well, you know, what I usually do is I make a timeline of everything that actually happened and type that out in black. And then in red, I put in all the stuff that I make up, or as I like to laughingly refer to it, the lying. So I had plenty of information on both Alexander, the magician, and the interpreter, Julius, and then using other characters. So like Julius's brother, who's the villain of the book, I made up characters that, you know, would make a good story, like Lady Jane, the Indian prostitute, who becomes the most scandalous magician's assistant ever. And, of course, Prophet John McGarrigle, the clairvoyant Indian scout, who showed up completely unannounced. I had no idea he was going to be in the book, but there's actually no book without him. So he just, you know, when my character Julius met him, that was the first time I met him. I didn't know he was going to be in the book. I had no idea who he was, and he just sort of presented himself. Some things are planned and some things aren't.
Prophet John McGarrigle is my favorite character in this novel.
Yeah, he's kind of like Gabby Hayes, who can see the future, though, you know. Why was that? Why'd you like him so much?
I liked him because the way he spoke to all the characters, his outlook on life. I mean, when he was speaking to Julius or anybody else, they thought that he was just kind of speaking gibberish. I don't understand what you're saying. And there would just be these wise words, but in a completely different way. So it was the tone that he would speak to the other characters and then giving him those fits. And he would only get one per person, and you never knew when they were going to come. But giving him those fits of seeing the future just made him complete.
Well, thanks.
So I'd like to go back to Julius, because in the novel, he's a jack of all languages.
Right. He's a polyglot. He's one of those people who, we all know these people, they're in a country a couple of months and they speak like they lived there all their lives. Well, in Julius's case, he's an extreme case. He's someone who can be hanging around for a few hours and start picking things up. And historically, Julius not only spoke German, French, Yiddish and English, probably Polish among other languages, and probably Hebrew, but he also spoke seven Indian dialects. That's a lot of different dialects to speak for Plains Indians. So that's part of what it hinges on, is that this young boy who comes to America is able to sort of pick up almost any language and in some cases fool people into believing that he's actually a native of that area because he can really talk the way they do.
And Standing Bear is the chief of the Ponca Indians. That is the first tribe that Julius comes into contact with.
Yeah, Julius is, in my opinion, and a lot of people, certainly the most politically important Indian in the history of the United States. He was not only a great warrior in his time, but he was also one of the great peacemakers. But they moved him all over the place like a chess piece. And because the Ponca were such a small tribe, probably less than 1,000 people, whenever the Sioux said what they wanted, they would just break their treaties with the Ponca instead of having to deal with a much more numerous and difficult Sue. So Julius finds him, and what eventually happens is that Standing Bear takes the United States of America to court, as he actually did historically, to prove that the Indian is a person, a human being. He had never been considered that, and he wins. He wins in court. He sues the United States government and the army, the general of which is actually on his side in the trial, and proves in the world that, and that is when the United States of America, too late, unfortunately, stops moving the Indians all over the place because they are now considered to have rights. But it was Standing Bear who did that. And the trial is in the book.
It is. And on the flip side of that, one of your fictional characters, chased by owls, is the complete opposite of Standing Bear, where he is so sick of the white man coming and killing all of these Indians, as well as moving them around from place to place and putting all these restrictions on them, that he has decided to fight back.
Well, Chased by Owls is the Malcolm X of the book. He sort of says, well, I don't care. I'm going to do this by any means necessary. And his basic idea is, if I have to die, I have to die, but I die an Indian. I don't die some pale imitation of a white man, which is what the Indian genocide was largely about. If you couldn't kill them all, then you changed their culture completely. Chased by Owls puts up with none of that. He will kill anyone. He will risk death himself. He cuts quite a figure. He's very much like Geronimo. He's not going to go quietly, and in fact, he doesn't.
And then there's Lady Jane, also a fictional character, but, well, she's a survivalist, I believe. And not in a good way.
No. She's a survivalist, but unfortunately, if you get in her way, you're unlikely to survive yourself.
That's very true, and she definitely holds a grudge.
Yes, she does. Anybody who would grill her pimp on the metal bed springs of a bed is not a person to be trifled with, which is only one of the things she does in the book.
Which is kind of interesting that Julius's uncle, Eli, brings out that nicer side to her. And you think at first when you see that side that, well, I think she'll be a good character in this book. But then as we go on, we're thinking, oh, maybe not.
Well, if you recall Etta, my first novel, which you so graciously said you liked, you know, Eli's in that book. And you may not remember him. He is the peddler. Now, remember, this is 30 years later. He is the peddler who tells Etta the real name and the origin story of Hantewe, the Indian girl. And I always liked him, and I originally created him as actually a bedtime story character for my son. This is many, many years ago, to help him with his nightmares. That's a long story, but Eli went from Etta to this book as a much younger man. But the thing about Eli is kind to everyone. He's just that kind of person. And he's probably not only the only white man that Lady Jane doesn't despise, he's probably the only man she doesn't despise. And you find out in the book, she has very, very good cause not to particularly like the male of the species, to say the least.
Mm. And then we think Lady Jane is bad. Well, then we go to Alexander Herman the Great's brother. And, man, he is an excellent bad guy in this book.
Well, Comparse was 28 years older than Julius. There were, I think, 13 kids in the family. So there was a gigantic age difference. He easily could have been Julius's father. Now, historically, Comparse was, you know, the brothers had their differences, but it was nothing like it is in the book. But he is a maniac egotist, you know, somebody who could put, some of the great show business egotists like Al Jolson to shame. You know, he will stop at nothing to prove that his brother is simply his successor, simply his imitator, in the same way that Houdini was with his brother Hardeen. The only reason that Hardeen existed was to make sure that there were always two Houdinis, in a way, traveling the world. And Houdini, who was an absolutely supreme, insane egotist, did that to make sure that nobody else copied him and made sure everyone knew that, by the way, Hardeen is the brother of Houdini. If you can't see Houdini, he's a great second best. Now, that is an ego to conjure with. And in the book, Comparse is worse. It's even worse than that. He even, as it says, I won't give this away, but he even buys a trick that someone else invents that Alexander is trying to perfect just to keep it away from him. He doesn't even use it. That's egotism of the First Order. He's a bad dude.
He is. Nothing is beneath him.
And
Other than learning about the Trail of Tears in my history classes, I wasn't familiar really with any of these historical characters. Did you tackle this novel a little bit differently, assuming that people wouldn't know as much of the history as they would in your previous novel?
Well, the thing about the reason I liked Etta is because historically there's absolutely nothing known about her. Zero. I mean, they know where she was at times. They know what she looked like. But as we said the last time we spoke, she has no history. And mostly, and what makes her, and the reason, one of the reasons that that's so fascinating is because she was the only member of the Hole in the Wall gang who was never caught. Everybody else was caught. But she was never caught. And so if you never go to jail, there's no historical records on you. And if you live probably as she did under an alias, no one knows who you are. So in this particular case, I just found out about Julius and said, I have to write about this guy. And when I found out how he died, two bullets in him in a public park and declared a suicide, I said, this is nuts. I have to find out more. But there's a lot more known, although there's a whole lot, but there's a lot more known about Julius and Alexander and Compars and, you know, people like Billy Robinson in the book and so forth, about all these magicians and Indian chiefs and so on. There's a lot more known about them than was ever known about Etta. I had to sort of unearth things about her and make them up through things that were known about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. But in this particular case, I had a lot more to work with, but really it was just a fascination with a young kid, a Jewish immigrant from what's basically Poland, coming to the United States and becoming the guy who speaks for the Indians. And it all stemmed from that.
Our listeners can enjoy this novel and learn more about the characters. The name of the novel is Magic Words. Gerald, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, I very, very much appreciate it. And by the way, if they want to find out more, it's GeraldColpan.com.
Again, the name of Gerald Colpan's book is Magic Words. It is published by Pegasus Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.